This is episode 281 of Jumblethink.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1...
Welcome to Jumblethink, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. On today's show, our guest is Corey Zeidel. More about Corey in a moment. Whether you're a longtime fan or new listener, if you've never subscribed to Jumblethink, you should go do it right now. And how do you do it? Head on over to your favorite app to listen to podcasts like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Search for Jumblethink and click subscribe. By the way, we are now on Pandora, so you can head on over there, search for Jumblethink, and start tuning into the show on Pandora too. Now let's jump into today's show. Hey there, welcome to Jumblethink. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have an incredible show lined up for you today. Today's show is sponsored by our friends at Penji, your source for unlimited graphic design at a low monthly subscription rate. Head on over to penji.co, and as a listener of Jumblethink, when you use the code JUMBLE, you'll get 15% off your first month. So head on over, penji.co, use that code JUMBLE, and start getting perfect designs sent your way. Today's interview was recorded live at Podcast Row, hosted by Stand Up New York on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Our guest is Corey Zeidel. He serves as the principal attorney at Z-Law LLC and specializes in complex litigation, representing individuals and groups of individuals in class actions and mass actions in state courts and in arbitration against businesses harming consumers. Since Corey opened Z-Law LLC in 2009, he has represented more than 2.5 million consumers and received more than $100 million in judgments and settlements. Corey has appeared before the U.S. Supreme Court on behalf of consumers that were accusing a national bank of unlawful debt collection practices. In 2019, Corey launched SueThem.com, a first-of-its-kind legal technology platform in an effort to represent mass amounts of consumers across the country and to correct economic injustices inflicted by big business. Prior to becoming a lawyer, Corey was a two-sport college athlete and a stand-up comedian. Let's go ahead and jump into today's conversation with our guest, Corey Zeidel. Well, good morning. I'm so excited to have you on. This is Corey Zeidel. He is the guy behind Sue Them and much more to his story than just suing people. We're going to talk about the world of law and how to actually use technology in law. We're going to talk about his story of overcoming adversity to find the role in life that was right for him and much, much more. So, Corey, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, so you're from Baltimore. Well, you're living in Baltimore now. You've come up to Podcast Row here in New York City to tell your story. To tell a story, let's give a foundation. That foundation being, how in the world do you become an attorney when you're the kid who doesn't like learning, doesn't like the classroom?
Well, that's a good question. I would say it's not that I didn't like learning and that I don't like learning. I love learning.
Okay.
I didn't like the way people taught me.
Yeah.
So I was the kid in class growing up that nobody's parents wanted to have in their kid's class.
Okay.
I was a pest to the teacher. No one could learn. I didn't know what raising my hand meant. And if I did, I just talked while I did it.
Wow.
I was put in carrels, which they don't do to kids anymore, where you sit in a desk, but there's wood all around you, so you can't see the next person next to you or in front of you.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they do that to kids now, and you know, people would lose jobs.
Yeah.
But that was fine when I was younger.
Yeah.
and then as I went through school, it turned out that I did have issues with learning.
Okay.
And I received some help thanks to my parents and reaching out to the school. And in 11th grade, I actually learned how to read.
Wow.
And comprehend.
Wow.
Prior to that, I was just a smart kid that didn't know.
Yeah.
I could read, but I didn't know what I was reading.
Yeah.
I went to 4 colleges.
Yeah.
I went to community college. I went the hard way, but I wound up graduating from the University of Maryland at College Park with a business degree.
Wow.
I knew I was going to own a business, but I didn't know which one.
Yeah.
I'd already owned 2 businesses by the time I graduated college.
Wow.
But at that point, I knew how to learn, and I thought, what is it that I'm going to do? How am I going to disseminate all of this power that I've accumulated with knowledge? And I wound up on a trip to Israel.
Okay.
For a couple of weeks, and while I was there, I met a bunch of kids my age let's call it similar intelligence levels with a little more ambition in life.
Yeah.
And they were all going to law school, medical school, and advanced degrees. And so I decided to do the same. I didn't want a business degree, an MBA. I'd already gone to business school.
Yeah.
So I chose law because I had learned from research and talking to people that law school doesn't teach you how to be a lawyer. It teaches you how to think critically and how to analyze situations.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's one of the things that our educational system doesn't do well. It teaches people how to follow standards and forms and factors of how to live. I know for me, I can relate to that story, your story, because I had a similar situation where I learned differently than how they taught in the classroom. I had a hard time in first and second grade. All of a sudden, you know, because my parents were advocates and because we had a really good doctor and some other things, they went, you know, you're not dumb. You just don't learn this way. So let's figure out how to shift this around. And so by the time I was in fourth grade, I was in accelerated classes for math and stuff. And then by the time I was in middle school and high school, I was taking, you know, AP classes. And I get that. I get that we're not teaching our kids. We're trying to make it universal, and that doesn't work for everyone. So I can relate to that. Now, you find that you do love learning somewhere along the way. You mentioned there 11th grade. You're like, oh, this is how I read. This is how I understand and comprehend. You went to school for business. That was your first degree. Why business?
Well, I always assumed that I was going to own my own business.
Okay. Why did you always assume that?
Well, let's just say I have a small problem with authority.
Don't play well with others.
I play well with equals.
Okay.
And I play well with teams.
Yeah.
And I grew up playing team sports. I always team sports.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be the captain of the team.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to be a coach on the field.
Yeah.
I went to business school because I had already started a business when I was in community college.
Right.
And it was, I'd say it was mildly successful for the amount of time, effort, and capital that was put into it.
Yeah.
But it was never going to be an expandable business.
Right.
It was a service business that was going to be local. And as much time as I put into it with a partner of mine, that was what we were going to get out of it.
Yeah.
I wanted to be in a position to understand business more deeply.
Yeah.
And I did marketing specifically.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to understand how to get what I believe is my good voice and my good ideas to the masses for the least amount of money.
Yeah.
And so I chose business school for that purpose.
Right.
I was going to graduate or not graduate from college, but either way, I was going to learn textbook style how people have run successful businesses and failed running what they thought were going to be successful businesses. I wasn't necessarily planning to follow that script, but I wanted to know what had worked and what had not worked, because in the end, I think what worked for one person very well may not work for another person based on their personality and what their business is.
Yeah, completely agree with that. I think that we're always looking for a system that's fail-proof, but the truth is that there are so many pieces that come together that create the magic of an entrepreneur. So for you, you then go get that law degree. Then you go work in the law industry, working as an employee. Tell us a little bit about that and what that was like for you. You already mentioned that you want to be that leader. You want to be that person that's casting vision, that's creating the path forward. So how do you go from, I'm going to go into business. I'm going to take over the world. I'm going to be this tycoon of business to, I got my law degree. That was good. And now I'm going to go work for somebody.
Yeah. What a bummer. Well, let's go back to law school for a minute, because law school was a serious struggle for me, not the learning side. I had figured out how to learn.
Right.
I did great. I graduated with honors. I had no trouble in law school. But what I learned in law school was that the path that I thought I was going to take was not the path that I was getting pulled towards.
Mm.
Because I was toward the top of my class, I was being interviewed by large law firms.
Yeah.
I was being pulled in that path of huge salary, no life.
A little
never
tempting
gonna,
here.
Never going to own anything. But I've never seen that kind of money before.
Yeah.
So I gave that a shot.
Yeah.
And the money was wonderful.
Yeah.
I will give big law firms that. They have that going for them.
Yeah.
They sure know where the money is.
Yeah.
But I learned very quickly, maybe 4 weeks.
Wow.
I learned that it was never going to be my life.
Wow.
And a lot of people get trapped into it. And every year they get an incremental raise and it's a little more money and they buy a nicer car, they get a big mortgage, and they can't get out.
Yeah.
They're stuck.
They've eaten the forbidden fruit. They've sold their soul to the devil.
And that's it. They better make partner at that firm because I don't believe that they're ever going to leave and be able to get a huge corporation to come along with them.
Yeah.
In their sole practice for their national issues.
Yeah.
So what happened with me? Same thing that happened throughout my entire life. I couldn't hold a job in a law firm. I worked at two different law firms. I got great training, and they were on the smaller side. So it was a little more personal, but I was representing businesses, and it didn't feel rewarding to me to help a business keep money from from a dying person.
So let me stop you there, because it's, you know, we say you were a lawyer. There are all kinds of lawyers. There's personal injury lawyers. There's corporate lawyers. What was the kind of lawyer you were? Because I think that helps inform a little bit more of this conversation.
All right. Well, I was a bad one.
Bad as in you didn't do your job well? Or
that's
bad?
Right.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Because, you know, and I did my job to the best of my capabilities for the work that I was doing.
Yeah.
But my heart wasn't in it. Because what I was trying to accomplish in that job, so I'm a litigation attorney. I'm a trial attorney. But when people think litigation trial attorney, they think Boston Legal, you know, whatever they saw on TV.
Yeah.
Something happens and there's an injury or someone's going to jail, and then the next day you have a trial in court.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like that at all. It is tedious, monotonous, repetitive work, day after day, recording your hours, answering to the man, and keeping people from getting money.
Wow.
And it just wasn't enjoyable to me.
Yeah.
But I did it to the best of my capabilities. I learned what I needed to learn. And then I transitioned to another law job where I was doing the same thing, except I was doing it for the people.
Mm.
And then it kind of clicked to me. I'm 4 years in. Now I see there is a benefit to what I've learned. I can use all this knowledge that I've acquired for what I believed and still believe is for good.
Yeah.
And help people when they're being injured by businesses. So I worked there for a couple of years.
So you flip sides. You were helping businesses keep what was theirs, and now you're working for consumers that are legitimately wounded by whatever. Maybe the Roundup case is a good example of that, where Roundup is causing supposedly cancer. Somebody comes in and says, hey, this isn't right. You've got to pay up for that. They go to whoever makes Roundup, and then all of a sudden, Roundup has to pay for the cancer.
Right. So I want to be on the non-Roundup side of that case.
Okay.
All right. And I learned that when I switched jobs. And I did good work. And everyone was happy. But, you know, it didn't take long before I started seeing things differently than the people I was working for.
Yeah.
Great people.
Yeah.
Taught me. I'm able to do now what I do because of them.
Yeah.
But we would disagree on things because, generally speaking, I want my decision to be the decision.
Mm.
And I've always wanted it to be that way. And maybe that's what caused me so much trouble when I was younger.
Yeah.
Is that no one would allow me to be the decision maker.
Yeah.
Now I have this opportunity to be the decision maker.
Yeah.
So I started my own law firm in 2009. And it was a slog.
Mm.
Z-Law LLC, intentionally named without my name in it, to be different than every other law firm in the country. I didn't want to have my name and then one day have seven commas after it with other names.
Yeah.
Because that just looks like a bunch of guys and gals that are like everyone else.
Yeah.
So I named my law firm Z-Law LLC. It gives it kind of a mystique. It's a little mysterious.
Yeah.
You probably have to click through the website to find out who it is.
Yeah.
And to get the story. So I did that, and I was doing consumer class actions, which for most people that don't know, because everyone thinks they know what class actions are, but no one actually knows.
Right.
A class action is where one person who believes they've been injured goes in front of a court, files a complaint in court, and asks the judge if that one person can represent every other person who's similarly situated and similarly harmed represent them in that case.
Yeah.
So that's a class action. And people think of class actions, they think of the 33-cent check they got in the mail that they didn't know about and they weren't going to take the time to cash.
Right.
Or the $7 postcard, the postcard that says if you fill this out and you return
then
in 12 months,
you
may get a check for $7.
Yeah.
That's what people think of when they think of class actions, but that's not my version of a class action.
Okay.
When I do class actions, I file cases to get people relief.
Okay.
To get them what as best as I can, what they deserve.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sometimes what they deserve is 33 cents.
Yeah.
If you were overcharged for 2 cents of taxes for a year and a half, and the person gets you those 33 cents back, well, guess what? You deserve that 33 cents and the company doesn't.
Yeah.
So you should get that check for 33 cents.
Yeah.
And please go cash it.
Yeah.
Because 33 cents times 100 million people turns up to be a couple of dollars.
Yeah.
And it matters.
Yeah.
You know, but you get a $7 postcard, a postcard that says you might be able to get $7 12 months from now, you're probably not going to fill it out. And if you do and you get that check, you're probably not going to remember you filled it out and you think it's bogus and you're going to throw it away.
Yeah.
That's not what we were doing in my cases. We file legitimate cases that can potentially recover real money for people. And I was pretty successful for about 8.5, 9 years.
Yeah.
Going strong. And there was a kind of a, over time, I realized that the tides were turning in favor of big business.
Yeah.
And so I needed to make a shift in the way I was doing cases. If you look year after year, the number of cases that I was filing was staying the same, but the number of cases I was winning was going down.
Right.
So what was the issue? What did I have to solve? What did business school teach me I needed to do?
Pivot.
I had to.
Yeah.
I want to continue to own my business.
Yeah.
And if I didn't pivot, I was going to wind up working for somebody.
Yeah.
Out of money.
So I want to fast forward a little bit. Somewhere along the way, according to the research I did, you won a U.S. Supreme Court case?
That's good research. It's 50% correct.
Okay. Which 50%?
The half that you were correct on is that I did have a case that went through the United States Supreme Court. Unfortunately, the part that you got wrong is that I lost that case.
Oh, okay.
And didn't even get one vote on my side. Nothing.
Wow.
But it's a rather interesting story.
Okay.
Because the case itself was a case that no one else would have filed.
Yeah.
It's a case, I'm sorry, not no one else. No consumer attorney would have filed. Because most consumer attorneys, and I can tell you this from experience having done the case and having heard from many consumer attorneys telling me don't do it, believed that it was a non-starter.
Okay.
The issue that I was presenting, I was going to lose,
yeah,
no matter what level I took it to.
Yeah.
But I already agreed to represent this person in a separate case. This was an overlapping issue. I won the first case. They were made whole in that case. I filed a second case for the same person and same group of people.
Yeah.
And I heard from everyone. And when I say everyone, I mean anyone who had an interest in making money doing these types of cases. I heard from, don't do this.
Yeah.
My answer is, I don't answer to you.
Yeah.
And I don't answer to other consumer attorneys. I answer to my clients.
Yeah.
What happened to my client was unfair and unjust. Whether the law says it's legal or illegal, someone needs to shine a light on it.
Yeah.
And something needs to be changed.
Yeah.
And if it means me going to the United States Supreme Court and getting my butt kicked, that's what's going to happen because we're going to see it to the end.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Wow.
We lost. We appealed. 3-judge panel lost.
Wow.
Petitioned the United States Supreme Court. Very few cases get accepted to the United States Supreme Court. It was an honor to be there. They accept the case. Go to the United States Supreme Court. And zero votes.
Wow.
And all the press that covered the result of the case talked about how it was Justice Gorsuch's first opinion.
Wow.
It was the second day on the court, first opinion.
Okay.
And they're talking about this conservative justice that takes away rights from consumers. And nobody called me to interview me to ask me what I thought.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I think.
Okay.
I think that if I can't get Justice Ginsburg
uh-huh.
or Justice Sotomayor or any of the other liberal justices to throw even a pity vote my way,
yeah,
then probably it wasn't a conservative justice that did that.
Yeah.
It was everyone that disagreed with me.
Yeah.
Not just the justices.
Yeah.
The four other judges that heard the case before that.
Yeah.
And every consumer attorney I had ever spoken to.
Wow.
But it raised awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's going to do good things in the future as far as consumer rights.
Well, and that raises a good question, because there's a difference between legally right and wrong and morally right and wrong. And we're going to get into that in the second segment. We're going to take a break right here. And we're going to get into a conversation about justice versus money, justice versus morality. And we're going to talk about that a lot more in a moment. Today's show is sponsored by our friends over at Penji. Penji is your source for unlimited graphic design at a low subscription rate. What that means is you pay a monthly rate and you get unlimited graphic design. How does it work? Well, once you sign up, you head on over to their online platform. You write up a little project brief telling them what you want designed, maybe a logo or a flyer, maybe a new design for the front page of your website, or even an email campaign. Then it goes on to their designers. They work on the design. They send it back over to you. You can approve it. You can review it. You can revise it and work through the process of getting the right design for your project. What's really cool about it is that they give you unlimited graphic design at a low subscription rate. And as a listener of JumbleThink, they're doing something even cooler. When you head on over to penji.co and you use the code Jumble, they're going to give you 15% off your first month. So whether you're a big corporation, a small business, a startup, or even a marketing team, they can help you get the perfect design on time and in budget every time. So head on over, penji.co, use that code Jumble, and start getting the right design for all of your needs. Now let's continue the conversation with today's guest, Corey Zeidel. We are back with Corey Zeidel. There's a significant question that we always like to ask right here. People listening, they want to know, how can they find you?
Anyone who's interested in talking to me personally can email me directly at Corey, C-O-R-Y, at suethem.com, S-U-E-T-H-E-M.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, but it's a little impersonal.
Yeah.
So I would suggest, if you want to reach me directly, you come straight through my email that I answer, that I'm up until 2-3 in the morning looking through. And there's no one who reaches out to me who doesn't get a response. It might be a couple of days, but I will get back to you personally.
And if you're listening, you can also just go to suethem.com to learn more about what they're doing. Maybe you are wondering if this is the right place for you. And so go check that out for sure. All right. We, in the first segment, talked a lot about your story. In this segment, we're going to talk a lot about more of the broad range story of law. And we're going to get into a little bit about your platform and what you're doing there at suethem.com. There is this question, and I alluded to it in the first segment, about justice versus morality. What is morally wrong versus what is legally wrong? And then there is the question of money versus justice, which is, let's be honest, a lot of the decisions today, whether it's in politics or whether it's in law, are money decisions. So talk to us a little bit about the difference of justice versus morality and doing the right thing, even when, like in this case of the Supreme Court case, you knew that, hey, this is probably a losing fight, but it's the right fight to do. You made a decision there that was went counter to what other people said, but it was a question of morality versus legality. So talk to us about that and reconciliation of those two things.
Right. Well, so what I did in that case was I violated every principle of business learning that's ever been taught.
Yeah.
And that's how I operate, own and operate my business, is we are a profit-seeking institution whose first mission is not profit.
Mm.
We seek access to justice and correcting imbalances that's been established through law.
So when you say justice, let's define what that actually means, because it is a fluid word that many people will twist into their own image, if you will. So what does justice really mean?
When common law was converted into statutory law in the United States, meaning
common law versus statutory, what's that?
Common law was just judge-made decisions that created rights.
Okay.
It came from British common law.
Okay.
Come to the United States, they start having written laws that say, this is okay, this is not okay. This is the line between legal and illegal. And mostly it was criminal.
Yeah.
And that's almost all based on morality. What people believe is moral at that time is legal. What the masses believe is not moral becomes illegal. And then you come to more recent days, and that starts to show up in civil statutory law.
Okay.
And by civil statutory law, I mean business interactions.
Okay.
And where I get involved, consumer dealing with businesses.
Yeah.
Where is the line between what a business can tell you that they're going to do and not do?
Yeah.
What is the line between how much interest a business can charge on a loan and what is too much?
Yeah.
And a lot of that goes back to morality.
Yeah.
Is it moral to be able to charge more than 24% interest on a loan?
You know, well, a lot of people would say yes in the banking industry.
Banking wants no cap on interest.
Yeah.
24% in Maryland. And when people hear this, they lose their mind.
Yeah.
In Maryland, the law that most contracts are guided by, are controlled by, allows for 24% interest to be collected by a bank on a loan.
Yeah.
But not just 24% interest. Then you can have late fees.
Yeah.
You can have pay by phone fees, potentially.
Yeah.
You can have refinancing fees.
Yeah.
Junk insurances can be sold with the loan.
Yeah.
When does it cross the line where the business becomes a loan shark?
Yeah.
Rather than just making a fair profit.
Right.
And so the law is supposed to draw that line. And we think that it's based on morality. What is a fair profit for the business who should earn money for deploying their capital?
Yeah.
But what is too much where it creates a situation where the person who's borrowing the money can't live a normal life?
Right.
So that's where we get involved. If the law is unclear in any way, we step in. My law firm steps in and says, okay, I know that your document says 24%.
Yeah.
But we don't think you're charging 24%. We think you're charging more because you've added junk fees.
Yep.
You're servicing the loan in a way where you're not applying the payments on the right day.
Yeah.
You're not allowing people, you're not processing payments correctly.
Yeah.
You're putting them on the wrong account. You're changing the order in which charges are made.
Yeah.
These are issues that we come across every day.
Yeah.
So that's the morality side. Justice is different.
Okay.
I think justice means something different to every person.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what I think justice means.
Yeah.
Because I see it every day. I get phone calls, emails, letters. I have people crying to me who I've never met. I have people practically begging me to take their case because what they want is to be heard.
Yeah.
Winning is not justice.
Yeah.
Losing is not justice. Due process is justice. Getting a fair chance to tell your story to the person or people who get to make the decision about whether you are right or wrong.
Yeah.
We can't control whether we are right or we are wrong.
Yeah.
That's going to be interpreted differently in different situations by different judges or arbitrators.
Yeah.
But what I can give to people is the access to justice. And so I lose a lot of cases, and I win some cases. But no matter what, at the end of my representation, my clients always come to me and thank me for letting their issue be heard.
Mm.
Same with the case that went to the Supreme Court. Same with cases that I lose in small claims court.
Yeah.
Same in cases where I represent people pro bono, for free in small claims court. So I'll have a $20 million case. I don't treat it any differently than a $2,000 case.
Yeah.
What those people want and what I want for them is to give them access to justice. And access to justice is the reason that I created SueThem.com.
Yeah. So when the motivator for a business isn't money but morality, how do you reconcile that? Because you still have to be profitable enough to actually keep the doors and lights on, doors open, lights on. So tell us a little bit about that, because there are a lot of people that take money to the nth degree, they're like, you know, when is enough? And, you know, there's that question that's going on right now about how much should a drug cost? If you have a drug that's being sold in one country for $14, but in America it's being sold for $1,200, is that just? And I think that's a good question, but it's all driven by greed and money, that decision. It's not about like, hey, this is what's fair to charge. So talk to us a little bit about how you reconcile that justice, doing the right thing, even when it's not the easy thing, when it's maybe not the profitable thing, versus the money that it takes to actually sustain a business.
Sure. Well, this is what I believe in my time in owning businesses is the fatal flaw in business school learning. Is that profit motive drives everything.
Okay.
And that has to be the case when you have shareholders.
Yeah.
Because you have to answer to them. They've invested their money and you have to provide them a return.
Yeah.
I get it. But private businesses don't have to be solely profit driven.
Yeah.
And there are no public law firms that are public corporations that on a market where people can buy shares in, because lawyers have made it that non-lawyers can't own any piece of a law firm.
Yeah.
So there is no reason why the sole motive to a law firm should be solely profit-driven. So what I do in my practice is I try to have a good balance of finding cases that can provide people justice, whether it's winning or losing, and also finding cases that I can win.
Mm.
And it's a hard balance. It's a constant struggle.
Yeah.
Because I would prefer to spend more time seeking justice for people and less time trying to make money.
Yeah.
But what I'm doing with my new venture is both at the same time. I'm giving a megaphone to the masses to seek justice at the same time against the same business for the same harm, without having to wait to find out what the result is.
Yeah.
And the difference being, it's just not rewarding. Even if you get a check in the mail for $250, and I provided you that check in a class action, you're going to be happy that you got that $250 check. But you're still unhappy that you weren't part of the process.
Yeah.
Now, was this the right amount of money?
Yeah.
Should I have gotten more? Do I deserve this at all?
Yeah.
I wish my voice would have been heard.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to do now, is I'm trying to give everyone a voice individually to control their own destiny and what they believe their recovery should be and what injustice was served on them.
Yeah. So I want to pivot here and talk a little bit about SueThem.com, because you're reinventing how consumer class actions are approached through that platform. Talk to us a little bit about what SueThem.com does versus what a traditional attorney might do in that process.
Well, SueThem.com is a first of its kind legal technology platform that provides consumers access to justice against the businesses that harm them.
Okay.
So what does that mean? Class actions are a mechanism to cure widespread injustice.
Yeah.
But what's happening is that there's less and less access to that justice because businesses have inserted class action waivers and arbitration clauses in virtually every agreement, every contract that you're going to sign, every website you deal with. Any company that most of this country does business with has a class action waiver and an arbitration clause, which makes it very difficult to be in court.
Yeah.
And very difficult to have a class action in court.
Yeah.
So how do you provide people their access to justice when you can only be in court for one person at a time? Or be in arbitration one person at a time? You give them the possibility of filing their own arbitration thousands of people at a time.
Wow.
So that's what we're doing at SueThem.com. We file our cases in court, and we tell the court that we should be in court because we believe that's where the most justice is served. It's non-confidential. Everyone will find out the result of it. But there's still going to be some people, even if we get to the end, there's still going to be some people that don't cash a check, or they're unhappy with the result, or wish they could have done something differently. So with SueThem.com, We are placing any case that we file in court, that is a class action, we're putting it on SueThem.com. And when you come to the website, SueThem.com, you'll look at what companies are up there, and you'll see if you did business with that company and qualify yourself for the case individually.
Okay.
And you will sign up through the technology that was built out by a team that I put together to sign up for our case.
Yeah.
But you're not signing up for a class action. So we're completely reversing the class action. What we're doing is we're taking each person and treating them separately, and we are filing individual arbitrations for each person that otherwise would have qualified for the class action that the business doesn't want to treat as a class action.
Yeah.
And we're allowing them to make the decisions about what they think their justice is. Maybe person number one in Hawaii believes access to justice is telling their story and getting a result, whether it's winning or losing. But person B in Pennsylvania might think access to justice is $1,000.
Yeah.
Well, that person can say, this will go away for $1,000. That's what I believe justice is in this case.
Yeah. It's letting a consumer decide what's right for them.
That's
right. And then pleading their case before the process to say, this is why $1,000 is justified. This is why a day in court is justified. Basically, what you're allowing people to do is opt out of being a class action suit and directly going to the process one-on-one.
They're coming straight at what the issue is for themselves and making the decision for themselves. And it's a unique opportunity for people because the general population doesn't know what's happening as far as access to justice.
Yeah.
I do because I've been there.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to keep a case in court. Now, I fight to the death to keep the case in court because in the end, I'm going to be able to sign up, let's say I sign up 5,000 people for a case.
Mm-hmm.
But that case would have otherwise had 70 million people who were affected by what happened.
Yeah.
So I provided potentially access to justice for 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Of the 70 million that otherwise would have received some type of justice through a class action.
But maybe not the right justice for them.
Potentially not. But the issue being, if I can get the justice for 70 million people, if I can place that before the court, then I do want to proceed that way.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone should have the access to justice. It's when the business decides it's in their best interest to shut the majority of people out. And generally speaking, shutting the majority out meant shutting everyone out except for the one person who filed the case.
Yeah.
Well, that person is going to go away pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if it's 5 or 10 or 20 or 25,000 people,
yeah,
I don't think that's going to go away so quickly.
Yeah.
There's going to be at least a couple thousand people amongst that 20, 25,000 people that are going to want to see it out to the end.
Yeah.
And in that process, we're going to find out, is it true?
Yeah.
Big business, did you do what we said you did?
Yeah.
Or are you just doing it and no one's ever going to know because you're stopping people from the access to justice that they deserve?
Yeah.
So in this process, we're not only giving people that personal decision, but we're also going to get to the end.
Yeah.
We're going to find out, we said you did this.
Yeah.
You have never said that you did not do this.
Yeah.
And in the end, in court, you're probably going to sign something saying that you're not agreeing that there was any liability or that we did this.
Yeah.
But if we have an individual arbitration or thousands of individual arbitrations and a person says, I'm not here for the money.
Yeah.
I mean, if I get money in the end, that's great. But what I'm here for is to find out, did this happen to me?
Yeah.
This better not have happened to me.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out, did this happen?
Finding the truth.
We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, it's rapid fire questions with today's guest, Corey Zeidel. Our passion here at JumbleThink is simple: to help people turn those dreams and ideas they have into reality. And I hope that it's helped you on your journey of chasing your dreams and ideas. If it has, or if you've enjoyed today's show or one of our past shows, would you do us a favor and share JumbleThink with somebody you know?
Think of that person who's always talking about one day when everything's perfect and the stars align and the world is as it should be, that they're going to create the next business or the idea or chase that bucket list item. Let them know about JumbleThink. Or think about that coworker, that family member who is always, they seem like they're thinking about the future and yet they never take the risk to jump into it. Let them know about JumbleThink. Let them know about how this show can help them on the pursuit of their dreams and ideas and how that you believe, just like us, they were created for something awesome. It would mean the world to us if you would share it with just one person, or maybe create a little social media post and share it online. Let others know what you think about JumbleThink, and let others know about how it can change their life. Now we're going to jump back into rapid-fire questions with today's guest, Corey Zeidel.
Placez votre électrophone à portée de votre main. Levez seulement le bras pour mettre l'aiguille sur le disque. Mettez le compteur.
All right, Corey, we're back for rapid-fire questions. We only have a minute, so we're going to fly through like two questions here. First question is, what is one book you think every dreamer should read?
I would pick any book written by Benjamin Franklin, preferably a book that's a collection of his letters, correspondence.
Okay. What is one trend you're currently excited about?
Oh, I don't know if I can answer that. I'm not a trendy guy.
Okay.
A trend that I'm excited about? Well, I love sneakers.
Okay.
I'm unfortunately, my feet are rotting, but I love sneaker releases and new sneakers.
Our final rapid-fire question is, what is one dream you're still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
That's an awesome question. Since I was a kid, I wanted to play drums.
Oh, okay.
And I just started taking drum lessons 3 weeks ago. I'm a train wreck. And it's not easy learning when you're an adult.
No.
But man, I'm going to learn how to play drums, and I'm going to force people to watch me play.
That's awesome. As we wrap up today's show, what's your final thought for our audience?
I want people to really consider, as they go through transacting with businesses, whether they're being treated fairly.
Okay.
Just think about it. Think about whether businesses are treating you fairly and whether government is making it so.
Yeah.
And if you believe that business is treating you unfairly and you think the balance of power is too far shifted toward business, then you need to raise your voice, whether that's through suethem.com or finding an attorney or calling your local legislator or running for office. You should do something about it.
Super cool. Thank you so much for taking time out and being a part of Podcast Row. It's great to chat with you today, and we can't wait to share your story and what you're doing with the world.
Thank you. It was great being here.
In a moment, we're going to be back for some final thoughts on today's conversation.
Ce disque sera pour vous un rempart contre la fatigue, la dépression, l'énervement.
Wow, I hope that you enjoyed today's conversation just as much as I have. It's been a lot of fun doing these interviews in person at Podcast Row. We're so thankful for the team at Stand Up New York for putting on these events and for bringing on some incredible people that we would never typically connect with. We've been trying something a little bit different over the last couple episodes. I hope you've been enjoying it. I've been hearing a lot of good feedback from people on this new segment. This new segment is my wrap-up on the show. It's my thoughts, what I think about the conversation, the takeaways I'm personally taking away, and hopefully that helps you. I'd love to hear what you think about it. Drop me an email, hello@jumblethink.com, or drop me a message, a DM through your favorite social media platform. We're there. So let's connect up that way. I'd love to hear what you think. I had three major takeaways from today's show. One personally resonated with me. One I think is a great takeaway for all of us today in the world that we live in, the society that's around us. And the final takeaway is one that is a lesson that all of us that are dreamers and idea makers need to apply. So let's jump into this. The first big takeaway really resonates with me personally. And that is that you have to find the way that you learn. We're taught in school a specific way. There's a specific method that's applied, and that's worked for a long time, but it doesn't work for everyone. I remember when I was a kid, I was having problems retaining the information. And they thought it was because maybe I was a trouble kid, and they put me in a class with all the troublemakers. I remember going home, and this was when I was super young, like first, second grade. I'd go home beaten up, and these were the people that were some of the worst of the worst in the school when it came to the attitude they had. And I mentioned it early in the story, or early in the conversation today, that my parents, my doctor, other people involved in the school became my advocate and said, no, there's something more going on here. All of us know that Mike is incredibly bright, but why is he having problems retaining this information or learning this specific way? They ran me through a whole bunch of tests, and the doctor's like, he doesn't need Ritalin. That's not the right answer. He doesn't need this or that. And through a couple years of really working through what was going on, it came down to a simple thing. There was a way that I learned that wasn't the way I was being taught. The teachers were perfectly fine in what they were doing. It just didn't resonate with me. Often, some of these fringe, the people at the edges that are innovating and really thinking about the future they're creating, they don't approach the world. They don't approach learning the way we're told we should do it. That's what makes them counter to the culture around us. That's what makes them stand out. That's what makes them flourish and really change the world. They have a counter thought, a counter perception, a counter approach that can impact the world. These are the people that often are told, oh, they're hyperactive. Oh, they're a trouble kid. Oh, they're just not smart. And in that process, we are overriding who they are. That's leading them to not flourish in the world around us. And it's not allowing us to benefit what they have to offer the world. If you're listening to this and you've always struggled with fitting in, especially when it comes to learning, you need to figure out what works for you. What works for you may not work for somebody else. And I think of people I know who are going back to school now with programs that work for their learning style, and they are rocketing into new futures that they couldn't even dream about because they were held back by the systems that were around them. And again, I'm not bashing the systems. The systems are there for a reason, and they work for a lot of people. But if you're not one of those people, figure it out for you. And just like me and just like Corey, you may need to learn a new way. You may need to figure out what works for you and how you can become who you need to be, how you can be resourced for the information and the knowledge you need to fully launch into the dreams and destinies you have. And if this is something that's really challenged you, I want to challenge you in a new way to not accept the way you've been told it always has to be and readjust into a new way, a new future, so that you can blaze a trail that works for you. So that was big takeaway number one. You've got to learn how you learn. If you don't, then you're never going to be able to excel at what you're created to do. Takeaway number two, being that this was all about law, especially when it comes to class action, the big takeaway was very simple. Justice matters. We live in a society where we wrestle with the conflict of legally wrong and morally wrong. We wrestle with the complexities of what does it mean to have justice, and what does justice look like? That is such a hard thing to wrestle with. And I don't know what specific takeaway around justice this gives me, something I've thought about since this conversation a couple weeks ago. But it has left me with this question of justice matters. What does that mean my responsibility is? For Corey, he set up a system that allows him, through Sue Them, to have people connect with him so they can get justice. But that isn't how I'm going to live out justice in my life. So for me, what does justice matter? What does that look like? How do I live that out and bring hope and help and love to a world that's broken to show them that justice matters? How do we right injustices, whether it's around race, whether it's around poverty. How do we approach these issues and find true justice? It is a very complicated question. I wish I had answers. I don't. But the best way to find answers is to start with questions that you won't stop searching to find. So that's takeaway number two, justice matters. And takeaway number three, finding what you're good at is a journey. Finding what you're created to do is a journey. For you, you need to be okay with the process. Corey had to go through many different situations to lead him to the place where he's doing what he's created to do, where he's found what he's good at, where he has found what he's passionate about. Often we are looking for the immediate answer, and the immediate answer sets us up for failure. We have to step back and really say, you know what? This is a journey, and I'm going to be okay with the process. Just keep working the process. Keep working through the questions you have. Keep working through the struggles you have. Keep working through the pitfalls and failures you have. Keep on going. We've said that before. It's like Dory. Keep on swimming. Keep on swimming. Keep on swimming. For you, it may be a hard journey. If you are doing something that matters, the journey isn't typically easy. So you need to take the time to allow the process to be what it is, hard. Stay the course, keep on going. You have to go through that journey. There is a guy named Joseph Campbell. He's written a book, probably a series of books, about what he calls the hero's journey. And it's this process of discovery, this process of turmoil, this process of going from a nobody to a somebody, and how it's a cycle, a circle that continues to go. When you have arrived to your current struggle, you get to, and when you've gotten through it, you get to the next struggle. And it's this process of constantly being on the journey of being a hero. And the hero isn't about being Superman. That would be awesome. I love Superman. But the process is all about being a hero in the life you're living. A hero to yourself in a lot of ways. And there are other people that you will be heroes to in that journey, and it will look different in each season. But it's really being the hero to your own life and really stepping into that fullness. So my big takeaways, number one, learn your way and find how you learn. Two, justice matters. Three, find what you're good at, but it's going to be a journey, and that's okay. I would love to hear what you think. What are your takeaways from today's conversation? You can drop me an email. You can go to jumblethink.com, drop us a note through the contact form, or you can join the conversation on social media and leave us a comment on the post about today's conversation. I hope it's challenged you. I hope it's encouraged you on the journey of chasing your own big ideas and dreams, because we do believe you were created for something awesome, that you have a purpose, that you matter. We're going to take one final break here, and when we come back, we are giving you a sneak peek into Tuesday's show.
Vous devez écouter ce disque plusieurs fois.
We want to take a moment and thank some people about today's show. We want to thank our friends over at Penji. Penji is your source for unlimited graphic design at a low monthly rate. We love them. We think you will love them too. And it's time for you to start getting the graphic design you need for your projects. Head on over to penji.co. Use that code JUMBLE. We also want to thank our friends over at Podcast Row for hosting today's conversation. It has been amazing to partner with Podcast Row, with Stand Up New York, to create these shows. I hope that you go check them out, podcast-row.com, to learn more about how you can get involved in their events too. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener. It is an honor to have you along for the ride on today's show and hopefully more shows. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for trusting us. Thank you for listening. I hope that it's encouraged and maybe entertained you along the way on the journey of chasing your big ideas and dreams. Now let's go ahead and jump into a sneak peek of our conversation with Tuesday's guest, Charles Mahlbauer. There are a couple things that are significant for every business when it comes to sales. Number one is increasing sales, potentially, if that's their growth model, but getting the sale and closing it, qualifying leads. But also beyond that, nurturing the person so that when the project's brought in, or the relationship's built, that they're conditioned to know what to expect too, I would assume.
Exactly.
And I think that a lot of people approach sales from the place of, we're coming in to close. And you see a lot of sales guys like that, like it's like hard close, hard close, hard close, close it. So what's your approach to sales?
Yeah, so you're half right. Ultimately, if a salesperson is being hired to work for a company, they're hired to close business.
Right.
Right? If they're not closing business by a certain time frame, they're not going to be there anymore. It's
right.
Black and white. That's how right. It works. It's not about... To say it's just about closing is half the picture. It's about closing the right people.
Okay.
Okay? Because if you close the wrong person, that company is going... Your company that you are working for now has new problems because you sold someone that you really should not have sold.
Mm.
For a lot of different reasons. You sold him because he's really not a fit when you convinced him somehow that it was.
Mm.
Or you sold him just because you dropped the price by half when you shouldn't have. And now that you've done that, the person is buying your service just like as a trial and on a whim.
Yeah.
And not really taking it seriously. You'll find in sales, and this should resonate with experienced salespeople, that those that are asking for pretty steep discounts are typically not good clients.
Right.
Yeah, because they're already causing you big problems.
Yeah.
And that's just like a red flag for all the problems that they're probably going to cause you once they sign up.
And if they're conditioned to think that, hey, I can get a deal this time, they're always going to be conditioned to like nickel and dime you through that process.
Yeah, and those aren't people you want to work with. And that's part of the beginning, yeah. Right? We talked about the close as a natural, should be a natural progression. And you said it. Before I did, experienced salespeople know that they have to vet the prospect,
yeah.
As opposed to an inexperienced salesperson who would think, I got to get this prospect here,
yeah.
Now there,
yeah.
Right? But if you're experienced, you're like, no, we don't work with everybody,
yeah.
And I have to ask these questions because it's not just important to us that we work with someone, it's important to you that you work with, this is a match.
Yeah.
Right? So that it's not just that we're generating revenue. This has to be recurring revenue.
Yeah.
Right? That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah. So let's talk about some nuts and bolts here a little bit. What are the different phases of sales? Let me back up. I'm going to ask that question again in a minute.
Okay.
But first off, sales is not something that's taught really in the world around us. You can learn it by reading. You can learn it by being mentored. There are ways to learn it, but it's not like a skill that a lot of people go like, hey, I'm going to go study sales
right.
at Harvard.
Exactly. I actually think Harvard now does have some sort of sales educational program,
yeah.
Interestingly enough, but you are correct.
Yeah, so it's not something, and there are those people that are inherently good at understanding people, and then the process becomes kind of natural for them to do sales because it's just part of who they are. But most people, when they think of sales, they're like, ooh, car salesman.
I know.
Or IT guy or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like the cable guy, you know. And so I think I want to step back. Well, the guy, you know, you're walking through the mall and he's like, hey, can I sell you some cable? You know?
That's true.
Or the phone guy. Hey, you want to switch providers? And you're like, oh, I just want to get to Annie Ann's to have myself pretzel because that's what I'm here for.
Right, right. Leave me alone.
And for many of us in business, especially entrepreneurs, we are the sales team in the early stages of our business because it's usually us. And then we might grow our team and then we have some people that work for us and maybe some of them are sales, maybe some of them are product fulfillment or whatever they are for your job. I think sales gets that kind of dirty word kind of thing. No one will really, when they first set out, go, hey, you know, it'd be great. Let me be the sales guy. And yet there are people that are amazing at it and that seem to love it.
They love it and they're people that live a very lucrative lifestyle from it. Exactly.
So talk to us about that and like the picture of what sales really looks like. I jumped the gun with the first question.
No, that's a good question. So two things. Number one, I find that when people do have a bad connotation with sales,
yeah,
it's always pretty much directly aligned with a B2C sale.
There is a lot more to this conversation. You're going to have to come back Tuesday to check it out. And as we wrap up today's show, it's your turn now. I believe you're created for something awesome. So get out there, dream big, and change the world around you.
Les mères de famille, les enfants,
peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant dans quelques mois, lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.